Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's another quiet summer week.
I was going to say, now what are we going to talk about this week? It's going to be hard to find a topic.
Well, I'm sure nothing will happen in the next week while you're gone. So, you know.
It's fine.
It'll be.
What I like to hear. The world really stops in my absence.
Yeah, it's funny because you couldn't have calculated, I think, maybe a better 1-2 punch. And if you throw in the tech executives testifying before Congress, a 1-2-3 punch.
Ooh, one,
a combination, 1-2-3 combo of things for Apple, then having Microsoft actively, publicly criticize Apple for blocking Xbox, which we talked about, the Xtreme product, and then this week having Epic Games come out and do their thing where they basically, they decided to set their product on fire in order to draw attention to policies at both the App Store and the Google Play Store that they feel unfairly take away their money by taking 30% off the top of their sales in those stores.
It is a bold move. You cannot, no matter how you come down.
The boldest.
Exactly.
And they knew what would happen because
sure,
they had their lawsuits
to.
Ready to go, and they had their viral video of Apple, but not one of Google, I guess, ready to go. Maybe they weren't as sure that Google was going to do it, but they did have the Google lawsuit ready to go. So this literally is them saying we're going to forego Fortnite business in order to make this point.
There was a good, I'm trying to remember now whose, it must have been John Gruber's take where he said, like, essentially Apple had a spectrum of options into how they deal with this.
For sure.
And
they took the middle route.
The middle route, right, which is no one who does not already have Fortnite can download it, but everybody who still has it can use it.
Exactly.
So it still
they didn't
functions.
Revoke their developer certificate, which would have invalidated all Epic Games apps on Apple's
that
platforms
would, that's,
immediately.
That's the that's nuclear
the
option.
Nuclear option, yeah.
Yeah.
This is more
and
of like a big mother of all bombs.
Yeah, exactly. That's wow. Yeah, I don't know. That seems like it would have really escalated things even further. I mean, I don't know.
You don't come back from that one. I think this is more a, you know, we look forward to Epic Games fixing their problem, which they're not going to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, or maybe they will, depending on what goes on now. Although it also is as a chess move, it's interesting because Apple could negotiate with Epic, but all that does is make it very clear that Apple's claim
rules
that
are open for negotiation.
Everybody has the same rules, because that's been their whole kind of argument. Is like, look, you know, we don't make the rules. Oh, actually, we do, but we apply them fairly to everyone. And that's already not true, but this would be very much not true. So if they make a deal with Epic, they look like they're doing favors to developers. And if they don't, then
they risk going to court,
right? Because that's really what it is. Yeah. Is what Apple's risking is not, because a bunch of people are like, oh, people are going to not use. Well, first off, it's like people are not going to use phones to play Fortnite because it's not in the Google Play Store. So it's like, if you want to play Fortnite on your phone, come on, find a better device to play Fortnite. First off, but if you want to play Fortnite on your phone, you'll need an Android phone and you'll need to sideload, and that's all you're going to have to do. It's like I don't think who was it? Christina Warren, I think, said. She didn't think she couldn't see which company needed the other one the most. And I think Epic might need Apple more than Apple needs Epic, but I think she's right that neither of them especially needs the other one. This is in some ways low stakes. Like, I don't think Epic's biggest income stream is phones. My gut feeling is it's millions of dollars of revenue, but that they could have a perfectly good business just on PCs essentially. And Apple, I don't think is going to be
consoles too.
Yeah, and consoles. Apple, where they pay a huge percentage, by the way. So, are they going to? When does the Xbox lawsuit happen?
Yeah, that's
so,
a whole different kettle of fish.
Well, I mean, or is it? That's
or
one of the
it?
Things
that
they
is
may
the
attempt.
That's
they may,
the question.
They, you know, because you could extend the argument and say basically what Epic Games is saying is platform owners who demand a cut are using their powers for evil, and they shouldn't be allowed to demand a cut, essentially is what they're saying. And
which,
that you could extend that very easily to PlayStation and Xbox if you wanted to.
I mean, yeah, you could. I mean, I think people, there's been a lot of I won't say bending over backward, but there's been a lot of contortions for people arguing about what is the difference between a console and a computer or a tablet or a phone, etc. And like, are they more than semantic differences, right? Because fundamentally, these are all computers, right? Like, they are all things that are built on the same components, computers. And they all connect things to the network. They all, right? Like,
so John Gruber just the software. Drove Ben Thompson into fits, I think, by insisting that the iPhone was a console. But I think it brings up a really good point, which is, why do we have different rules for consoles and general purpose computer systems? And what is the iPhone? And what is Google Play, right? Like, is it a controlled platform, or is it a install whatever you like? And iOS has never been install whatever you like, just like Xbox has never been install whatever you like.
The distinction is also some ways, this is a distinction that's rooted in a old way of doing things, right? You know, back in the day, if you had your Nintendo and your Sega and your Atari, you know, not all games existed on all platforms for a variety of reasons, including it was expensive to develop things for multiple platforms. They all had their own proprietary, you know, media, essentially, right? Like, you had cartridges and discs and whatever, and like, they simply did not interoperate, right? Like,
but I will say, because a lot of people will not remember this, like, this has happened before. Activision was founded as a game company that made by Atari game developers, Atari 2600 console game developers, who didn't want to write games and publish them through Atari. And so they set up their own company, and they made their own Atari cartridges that you could buy. And the lawsuits began, right? Because Atari was like, no, 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 only we can create cartridges for our platform. And Activision said, nuh-uh. And they went and did it. So that was an example. Even in the cartridge area, you know, but obviously then it becomes a war back and forth, right? Where you're like, well, we got to make it so that nobody, it's got to, like, I think a lot of the disk-based stuff, basically parts of the operating system were on the disk. So you couldn't just make a disk because you'd have to include their copyrighted material, which apparently Atari hadn't done.
Right, and I mean, Sony, I think, is always a great example.
I think the PlayStation
taken this.
Had the OS on it. But
literally
the
everything Sony made for a long time, you know,
only
was
work
all
with Sony.
About, yes, exactly. Yeah. Beta, and mini disc, and you know, all this stuff like memory stick or whatever. Right,
oh,
like
they had memory stick. Oh man,
yeah. Sony was big into their own stupid proprietary formats, which, you know, on occasion were technologically superior, but it was really an attempt to sort of clamp down on, like, we control every part of this, right? Like, in some ways, they were the proto Apple, like, really about, like, we're going to control the whole widget.
Sony is clearly a company that Steve Jobs admired and thought about as a
sure. I mean, why wouldn't you? In that era where the Walkman was like the you know, electronics device for a long time. But we've gone afield here.
But I feel like we've reached that point now where we, you know, and potentially, it doesn't have to happen, but it's potentially that legislators and regulators are going to look at this and say, okay, we need to decide about access to computing platforms and what the rules are. Because before we had sort of these lockdown things that were, you know, it was just a game machine, essentially, and they're completely locked down. And we had these personal computers that were completely wide open. Mm-hmm. But now we have the most important general purpose computing platform in the world, which is the smartphone. And it's On the iOS side, it's completely locked down. And on the Google side, I think the argument, a lot of people are like, but what about sideloading? I in the last few days, I've become more convinced that sideloading is never going to be a good enough for people, because Epic has said it's not good enough for them. That's why they're suing Google.
Right,
that's why they tried for 18 months to be out of the Play Store and then finally relented with a scabrous kind of message about how they felt like Google, because Google made it really bad and hard and scary and hard to find. And like, technically that people could sideload, but like, it's like putting your Mac in, turning off the security modes in your Mac. Like, they want you to not do it. They want you to not do it. And so the argument is that the one platform is locked down and the other platform is de facto locked down, because you have to go through Google Play and use all the Google Play stuff. And that means you have to get Google's blessing.
Yeah, and I think I'm of two minds about this going to essentially the courts and the legislature, because on the one hand, we've seen in the past that, you know, these people are not technologists by trade. A lot of times their understanding of the concepts are, you know, tenuous. And that can be problematic because they insist on things. I mean, I'm thinking of the encryption debate, right? Like, insisting on things that are technologically bad ideas or infeasible. only give keys to the good guys, right, for the encryption debate. And, you know, everybody in the technology community being like, it's not how it works. Like, you can't do that. But on the other hand, you know, there is a virtue to coming at this not from being hidebound in right. the semantics and being like, you know, people arguing and having somebody say like, look, what's the difference between a console and a
exactly.
computing device?
Your Honor, this is a game console. Yeah. So?
Yeah, like what's the point, right? Like, what is the real difference there? And I think the answer is, I think it's semantic. You know, I think it comes down to business practices more than it comes down to anything inherent to the technology. Yeah, I think here's the thing. I didn't read this whole piece this morning, but I think it was over on 9to5 Mac where, you know, somebody, I think it might be Ben Lovejoy, wrote an op-ed that was like, look, there's four ways this goes, and pretty much none of them are great for Apple.
Yep.
And I think that's probably true. I think Apple has a lot more to lose here than Epic does. And, you know, we said it's hard to say which of them needs the other more, but I think the problem is if, and I think James Thompson, our friend, has put this well in a couple places I've talked to him about it, is like, look, you know, on the one hand, Apple makes a deal with Epic and then the, you know, essentially establishes precedent. So other people will be like, well, you gave this deal to Epic. Like, why can't we get this deal?
Yeah.
On the other side, Apple wins and basically never has to cave to anybody ever again. And that's not great either, because there's going to be a lot of developers who, once Apple has, like, you know, established, like, hey, we can do this, we can get away with this, we are totally within our rights to charge the 30%, run the store however we want. That's not great for a lot of developers, because it really lessens basically any levers they have. If Apple's, you know, argument is like, look, you don't like it, walk. That puts a lot of people out of business potentially. So there's a lot of downside to go around here. And I'm actually not really sure what's the upside. Like, what is the optimal solution here? If both for consumers and developers and even for Apple. I'm not really sure how this plays out in a way that benefits these parties, if such a thing is possible, like certainly mutually amongst them.
Well, okay, so I think it's tricky because, first off, not lawyers. Second off, mm-hmm. I think we have seen in a lot of places, we don't know how the courts are going to react to these arguments, even if sure. they seem logical to us. And of course, we have governments and regulators, right? And I say governments and regulators because what I really mean is, like, in the U.S., the regulators essentially don't do anything. And we have an election coming up, so we don't really know what the government's going to be like in next January. And I say regulators because of the EU, because the EU is more aggressive with regulation right. and sure. the way they interpret it. But I think if you step back, you have to start thinking, if you're Apple, what is the new stable end game here?
Yeah.
And how does that look? And is that good enough for us? Because let's not forget that in many ways what we're talking about is a few billion dollars for a company that makes hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right.
Right. right? So it's real money for both Epic and Apple, but it's not life or death of the company money in any event.
Sure.
So yeah. what you don't want, if you're Apple, is for, like, Elizabeth Warren to be put in a position of power in a Biden administration and say, whoa, you know, my big idea all along has been to make it illegal for phone makers to have to run the App Store. And they would break up Apple. And that seems extreme, because it is. And it seems impossible, but it's not. Like,
yeah.
the government could decide to tear Apple's business into pieces. That would be really bad for Apple. So yeah. the end state they really want is probably either fight it and fight it and lobby and lobby and make it go away and nothing changes, which I would not bet my company on that as the strategy, but they could do that. That's sort of a strategy of denial. Or you look at it and say, okay, look, if we relent in some ways, can we get them off our backs? And does our business still look pretty good? And I would argue that there is a vast array of options they've got in there
sure.
where they can get people off their backs, they can look good to the public, and they're still making money hand over fist.
Yeah.
But it means giving up some degree of control and cash that they currently have. And yeah. are they willing to do that, or are they going to do what Steve Jobs did and say, no, we're going to take this to the end, which is why they are paid the special master to observe their ebook practices, because they lost at every level and mm-hmm. were humbled in that way, right? They could do that again, but the risks are high.
Yeah, and the App Store is a far bigger part of their business than books ever was, right? Like, that was a speculative business
sure.
that they set out on thinking, maybe we can make
business.
Some money.
Yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Maybe we can make some money out of this. And it turned out not only could they not really make a lot of money, but they got in a lot of trouble. And I think you're right. I think that the question is, so if I had to put money down on this, which I don't, thankfully, I would bet that it gets settled, right? Like, Apple and Epic will come to some agreement, and that agreement will potentially have changes to Apple's App Store policies. I don't think mm-hmm. we're going to see something like, you know, there's not going to be a future, I think, where Apple's forced to open up iOS and let anybody install anything.
No.
Like, that seems implausible. It's a bad idea because of the security concerns.
And Epic, for example, the instigator of all this, doesn't want it. Like, because they sued Google, too. They don't think sideloading is viable on Android, so why would they think it's viable on iOS?
Absolutely. So sideloading, not really the end result. I think the best situation is Apple saying, let's change the way we handle payment. Because I mm-hmm. think money cures a lot of ills, yeah. right? It makes a lot of people happy. And I think if Apple says, look, we have taken a hard look at this, and I mean, this is something I advocated in a Macworld column a couple of weeks ago, and I've said before, like, look, here's our deal. You want the ease and the security and the peace of mind from using our built-in store. You get that for just, you know, that 30%. But you know what? We understand some developers want to take things into their own hands and would rather use their own systems, and we're going to allow that. As long as you require that, essentially, that's transacted via Apple Pay, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and for that, you pay basically nothing. You make the deal with your payment processor, and, you know, we get yeah. our cut on the back end because it's Apple Pay.
And
we still make money off it.
I would go a little further. Not every country has Apple Pay, so you might have to finesse it a little
True.
Bit. But
okay.
I was going to say
approved payment vendors.
Well, they've got sign in with Apple too, so they could say, we'll let you pay. You have to offer our in-app purchase, but you can also offer an alternative. They might even say it has to be the same price, which, because Epic was taking Apple's percent and putting
discount,
it as a
yeah.
discount. Not all of it, because they were keeping some of it. But they might say that. But they could also say, if you have an external account system, which you have to, and they might say you have to go, it has to be on your website. You know, you can link to it from the app, maybe, but it has to be on your website. But you got to offer sign in with Apple, and you got to offer Apple Pay. And it's one of these things of like, they tell a story that is about protecting their customers. And it's like, well, we don't yeah. want unscrupulous developers to force people to sign up for an account on their service. But it's like, oh, well.
And then have to pay for,
right.
you know.
But sign in with Apple yeah. is safe, and Apple Pay is safe, and blah, blah, blah. So they could do something like that, and that wouldn't surprise me. I was also thinking that they could make a rule that treats everyone fairly, but doesn't, which is saying something like, for trusted vendors
yeah.
that have sold more than $1 million in-app purchases, we will allow them to add their own external. And it's essentially right. like, if you're big enough that you're reputable, we'll let you do it. But
right,
some little guy who's just trying to rip people off is not going to get access yeah. to this feature. It's only for people who move so much money through the App Store that we've decided we're going to let them. And I don't know whether that would quiet people's complaints or not, but like
that seems
kind of reasonable to me. But yes, well, if you're a small reputable developer, you're like, well, wait a second, I'm reputable, but I'm never going to move $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, I think Apple has already done this, right? That whole thing with Amazon where you could, you know, rent videos through Amazon.
Right.
It was the same
exception.
Idea where it was like,
yeah.
if you're established as a, like, one of these things, and everyone went, what the hell is this program we've never heard of? And they're like, oh, these guys in France have been using it
app.
For years, you know? And you're like, what? So it's
yeah.
like one company in France was using it, and that's a program now?
Yeah, and right. So they could just say that, which is like,
yeah,
all right,
yeah.
you can if you've got a so. And now what that would mean is what it didn't mean with the Amazon video stuff, which is it would mean that Amazon could then do it for Kindle and Comixology.
Exactly.
Because if you're logged in and you've already given them a credit card on their website, you can just make in-app purchases. I don't know whether that would satisfy somebody like Epic, but what the idea would be, if you go to the Epic Games website and you put in your login for Fortnite and you put in a credit card, then in the app, you can just spend money with Epic Games and not right. and not use Apple. Yeah. I think that's not at all unreasonable.
No, nope.
But I do see, you know, if you're Apple, the argument is, as it always has been, that, you know, you're on our platform making money from our platform, so we should participate in that in some way. Yeah. And I understand that, but I also roll my eyes at it a little bit because, and I said this last week, Apple makes a huge amount of money from selling these devices, and one of the reasons these devices are so popular is because of the apps that are on them. So I could argue that the existence of Fortnite makes money for Apple. Apple doesn't also need to take a 30% cut of every purchase made at Fortnite. That everybody's sure. making money here, people. Yeah.
Well, and if you're Epic, I think the key to some of this is, you know, like I said, it's the chess game. Epic's going to ask for more than it thinks it can get. And the sure. hopes that it can settle for what it wants. And I think that for Epic, that may be payment processing, right? Like, that might be enough to satisfy them because they're thinking, we're going to ask for the sun and the star and the moons, and we're going to be happy when we get the stars, right? Like, that's yeah. that's going to be fine. We will be satisfied with the ability to run our own payment system. We know we're not going to get them to, you know, abolish the App Store, whatever ridiculous, like, levels of you know, demands they're going to make on this. I think the payment thing is it's not the only thing, obviously, that bothers developers about the App Store, but it's a big thing, and lowering that, either lowering the percentage or finding ways to allow certain cases to work around it could potentially work in their favor, but you're totally right that there's also risk backfiring when all the independent developers are like, you know, why can't I qualify for this program? Like, why can't I have this ability? Like, I'm being discriminated against, essentially, now because I don't move enough product. And I mean, then it's a question of those people also don't probably have enough, certainly don't have deep enough pockets to go and file lawsuits like Epic is doing, because Epic is a giant company that makes a ton of money too. Let's not forget that. So, you know, there's still going to be a lot of grumbling and discontent among a lot of App Store developers, but Apple has assuaged the giant corporations that perhaps are the ones who are making noises about it in the press in ways that are going to get picked up on, right? Like, Microsoft and Epic firing shots at Apple is going to get coverage in a way that an indie developer complaining about yeah. mistreatment is not.
I think the only challenge is I've seen some people on Twitter, and, you know, bless their hearts, they say things like, Epic is doing this because they've decided to take one for the team in order to fight for the little guy. And, you know, the CEO
doesn't
Epic
care about you.
That. It's like, let me tell you, I think that Epic doing this in public, the way it's doing it, is admirable in a way, because they are pointing out an injustice that it's true indie developers have pointed out for a long time, and nobody cares, essentially. Nobody says anything about it. That said, if Apple and Epic find a way to resolve this so that Epic makes a lot more money and ends up looking good, and it leaves the indie developers high and dry, they will make that deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will because they're a business and they want the money. And this is
right.
And at its core, this is about saying, I don't want you taking my money.
Let's not delude ourselves. It all comes down to money,
yes.
right? It's the same reason why yes. indie developers can't get that traction, is because you can complain all day long. Heck, you and I can write pieces saying this indie developer, you know, this happened to them and this is really unfortunate, or this seems like unfair treatment. Apple doesn't care unless you hit him in the pocketbook, and then that level is never going to really make a dent. Like, you've got to be the level of Fortnite or the level of Microsoft, even, and honestly, not even the level of Microsoft, right?
Apparently.
That the xCloud thing does not seem to really have, you know, carried a lot of weight there. I mean, it's different if, you know, they get into a fight about, say, Office. That might, you know, have a little bit more impact, because Apple likes to be able to tout that, and that does help sell devices. But yeah, it's got to be something like Fortnite. And so I agree with you. I think it's good that Epic is willing to throw its weight around. But, you know, I'm not kidding myself in thinking that they're altruistic in their motives here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Apple, if it was in... The thing that makes this interesting to me is that I think Apple would not change its stance much at all were it not
right.
for the threat of... regulators and laws coming to bite them and wreck their business. That's the threat that's hanging out there.
What else is big enough, really? I mean,
yeah.
you know,
I mean,
there's nothing.
What's bigger than Apple at this point, right? Nothing.
The government, about it. Yeah.
But Apple is in a culture of nation states that yeah. that follow laws. They have not yet, you know, built an island and you know, they had to follow laws. They had to follow laws. Yeah. And that's what's going to get them, right? Like, that's potentially what could get them. And that's what they need to protect against and be defensive against.
They want to toe that line of, like, how much can we get away with before we get regulators and government smacking us down?
Yeah, what can we
crossing
what,
that line?
Can we throw them a bone that gets them to stop bugging us while we continue having the control that we want?
Yeah, and as you and I have discussed, I think just recently with the whole Microsoft thing, like, there's a question of culture and philosophy there as well, which I think is an interesting perspective to look at this, because and you know, Epic used this as ammunition, right? Like, they used the whole 1984 ad and they wrote a whole thing in their, you know, lawsuit about Apple used to be cool, man, right? Like, now they're just the man. And I think there are a lot of people in the Apple community who do find that cognitive dissonance jarring at times, to be like, well, I love the products this company makes and I want to support them. But on the same page, I have to deal with this problematic element of, look, they don't always comport themselves in a fashion that aligns with how I would like to believe that they act, right? Like, I want to believe they do things for the good of humanity and they make awesome products so that I will be happy as a consumer. But, you know, they're also a corporation and their job is to build shareholder value and increase their share price and all that jazz. So, you know, that is, I think, always a interesting struggle within the Mac community, is to watch people who are trying to come to terms with that and thinking either like, oh, do I need to defend Apple about that? Hint, as we've said before, you never need to defend Apple. It's not your job. You don't owe them anything. Yeah. They're a giant $1 trillion corporation. They don't need you.
Yeah, they don't need your protection from perceived slights, which is a lot of what happens. But yeah, it's true. There's a lot of people who, I think you said it perfectly. There is a great deal of cognitive dissonance about Apple being the plucky up-and-coming company that has our best interests at heart and is fighting against the man, and today's Apple, which is the largest highest valuation company and one of the most powerful corporations in the world, and still I believe has a commitment to making great products, and it cares about its customers, and it cares about customer satisfaction. Tim Cook cares about customer sat, people. But it is also an enormous corporation wielding an enormous amount of power. And the traits, this is the core of it for me, the traits instilled in it by Steve Jobs when Steve Jobs was trying to protect it after it almost died and keep it alive, most of them serve Apple incredibly well and have served them well and continue to serve them well. And the Apple Silicon transition is a perfect example of that, where that is, don't rely on anyone else. But if it's a key component, make it yourself and all of those things, right? But there are aspects to that same personality. Amazing. Apple is kind of like a person in that there are parts about them that are good and parts of them that you're like, there is a trait in Apple, which is to be like, always believe that, I mean, I said this before, always believe that everybody else is just out to take money that is out of Apple's greatness, and Apple is owed that money. And I think you see it in no place more than in the cut that they take of the App Store stuff, where they're like, no, you're going to stay in the lines, you're going to only use our system, you're going to give us the money. And when the mask drops, it drops when they say things like what they said about Basecamp, right? Which is, you built a whole business. And what they said is, you built your whole business freeloading on our platform and didn't give us any money for it. And very clearly, they feel entitled to the money from any business that exists on Apple's closed platforms, right? And like, again, it served them well. It helped them build the App Store. It's helped make them what they are today. However, that part of their personality doesn't travel well with its current position of power is, because what used to be a thing they had to do to stay alive and protect themselves now comes across as running up the score.
Yeah, you kind of want Tim Cook to have the David Mitchell moment of, are we the baddies, right? And be like, wait a second, hold on, we're doing this thing. And, you know, I'm not sure that is something that's ever likely to happen. But you're right. It comes down to something that's fundamentally at odds with the way, you know, how they see themselves versus how they actually are in the world. And that's, they're not the scrappy underdog that they were 25 years ago. Like, they're the biggest company in the world.
But it is also fair to point out that Epic is challenging Play Store and App Store because Epic can afford to do that without destroying its business.
Sure.
And it's not doing that with PlayStation and Xbox, where they where they sell through those platforms in-app purchases, and where those platforms take 30%. Yep. I think Sony takes 30%. I was seeing that on our members Slack today.
They prefigured the
contents of this podcast. So I hope they enjoyed. I hope we lived up to their imaginary version of this podcast that they thought of earlier today while I was still sleeping. But like they, I'm just saying, Epic's idealism seems to only go so far. Unless today they come out with their Sony and Xbox updates, but I don't think they're going to do that.
That's a huge move then, because at that point it's like,
they've set their whole business on fire.
They set their whole business on fire. Like
that
is, yeah, I think that is.
And they may not have to. That's the thing I keep coming back to, is they may not have to, because if there is a legal ruling that Apple has to open up their payment processing system or their platform in some other way to Epic, and that Google has to do it, that,
why not the other companies?
At that point, I think you then say, this also has to apply to the game console makers, right? Like they don't necessarily even have to attack Sony and Microsoft to get the desired result.
Right. And you can do that without, you know, basically immolating your business. You know, that's if that just trickles down from the result of who you took on, then you've just made a very canny decision, right? Like where can we apply this pressure in a way that's actually gonna sort of trickle down to the rest of our business? And yeah, I mean, the for a long time the game stores got away with this in some part because like cross-platform things wasn't really a thing, right? Like you can't take your PlayStation game and stick it in your Xbox and just have it work, right? They're different systems. And that was, again, there was a time when that was the case, but now more and more stuff is cross-developed, more and more stuff has cross-platform you know, network play and stuff like that. So there are fewer of those exclusives, right? And a lot of times that's all just stuff that's locked down by business basically these days. So the game consoles have kind of flown under the radar as a result, but you know, there's plenty of these shenanigans that go on in the game world where people sell, you know, exclusives or platform, you know, specific stuff. We were joking the other week on the Biff podcast that so there's an Avengers game coming out on the PlayStation and Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And Sony announced that you'd be able to play as Spider-Man, but only in the PlayStation version.
Only in the PlayStation version. Yes, in fact, we have pre-ordered that for Sony's platform because of that, for the PS.
And you're right, which is exactly what they want. And it is hilarious to read the explanation by the developer of the game where he tries to go through essentially why this is the case, and it's nonsense. It's just like total gobbledygook in terms of like, well, we just think the synergy of this moment. And you're like, no, it's because Sony probably gave you a lot of money to make this an exclusive, maybe back the game in some part.
And Spider-Man, you know, the Spider-Man game is a Sony exclusive, so it is actually creating some kind of a synergy between the Sony exclusive Spider-Man game and this other game,
right? But it's still. You know, it's business, right? This stuff gets done. These are behind the, you know, under the table deals or whatever, just like vertical integration, and it's Sony's business all over the map there. So that's how they want to do things, and that's how they want to comport themselves. And if you're a Microsoft Xbox user, tough luck. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yep. Yeah.
I
have both.
Nobody's suing them.
We have both, and so now I guess we get to choose. So, yay.
Yeah, I don't want to buy another console. I want to play that Spider-Man game, and if I were to play this Avengers game, which seems a little potentially like it might not be great, but I like the idea. You know, I just don't want to go out and buy an Xbox.
I bought a PS4 for Spider-Man. I bought a used version and not the fancy version, but I bought it for Spider-Man, and then I bought this summer, I don't know if I've mentioned this anywhere, but I bought a PSVR.
Oh, right, yeah.
And have been playing Rescue Bot? Rescue Mission? I forget what the name of it is. It's Astrobot Rescue Mission, which was recommended by James Thompson. He said that's the best PSVR game. And so it's the only one I've played. It's amazing. I love it. So Yeah. So I and the Spider-Man game is pretty great too. And now that we've got it, my son is like, all right, well, I'm going to get the Avengers game with that because it's Spider-Man, and he's played Final Fantasy Remake, and he's played a bunch of Sony stuff. It's funny because he was all Xbox for the longest time, but now he's sort of getting in the stuff that's a platform exclusive.
Yeah.
And I bought the PSVR because I want to play that Star Wars game in VR. So
yeah, I don't, I can't because I have an Xbox and I have to go buy a PlayStation and a PSVR. And that's
a lot of money.
It's too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, anyways, you don't get to play Spider-Man then. Too bad.
I know. I don't get to play Spider-Man.
What you need to do is have a friend who wants a PlayStation, and then you just swap your boxes back and forth every month.
See, you joke, but like when we did our podcast years ago on Journey, which is a PlayStation exclusive, I basically played it in my friend Jason Tassi's living room while he sat there.
I have, Dan, in this room, I have two PS3s because I was distributing them around so people could play Journey.
If, you know, in different times, I would gladly say, hey, can I come over and borrow your PlayStation?
I'm just thinking, you know, you need to make a pact with somebody where you just, every month or two, you just swap. You meet in a neutral location and wipe it down with alcohol rubs and just swap consoles. And then you play the other console and then you swap back.
Yeah. And that's fine. Actually, the biggest reason I have an Xbox is because I play a lot of online games and we all are bought in on Xbox. Like, that's the reason that I have an Xbox.
Yeah.
Years ago, like 13 years ago, when we made the jump from PC gaming to console gaming, we all decided to buy Xboxes. And that's how, you know, we're just in it. We're just in it now. So we're bought in.
Well, next week you're not here.
That's true. I'm gone.
So I'm sure nothing will happen.
August, usually so quiet.
Yeah. Also, I'll put in a plug. If you haven't already, if you're listening to this, you are eligible to get the special members only feed of 20 Max for 2020, which while we were recording today, this week's episode dropped on Relay FM for everybody, but people who are subscribed to that feed got it Monday, not Friday, Monday, which is earlier, the beginning of the week instead of the end of the week. And that's a service that members get, whether you're a Six Colors member or a Relay Upgrade supporter. But if you're listening to this podcast, you get it. You're a Six Colors member. You got it. So just go to the member center at sixcolors.com and there'll be a link there and you can subscribe and listen to it. And this week's is the PowerBook Duo. Mm-hmm. And what will next week bring, I'm not saying. That's a secret. All I will say is we did take a bunch of pictures the other day, pictures and video for the video versions of about like 8 or 9 computers that I have in this room with me that are part of that list. So I don't have all of them. Stephen Hackett has a bunch of them, but I have some of them. So the you know, project continues. As it will for, you know, until like December. It's a lot. There's a lot of computers, Dan. A lot of computers.
A lot of computers.
Help.
Lots go around.
Anyway, people can check that out too. And we're posting, you know, our weekly members only post. You did your thing about Headspace this week, which is nice. Nice to read about that. And yeah, that's it for this week. Next week, I don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to skip? Am I going to get a special guest? It's a mystery. How do I appease Kalendar? But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.